choices.
That makes so much sense. And thank you very much. I'm really glad that we finished on your call, because I think that's a very good definition. And I wish that Andy Burnham had elaborated in the way that you did. Now, in the final hour of the show, we're going to talk about ghosting, believe it or not. This is a phenomenon whereby a romantic interest or friend cuts you off and refuses to answer messages. Has it happened to you? And what impact did it have on you? But first, the daughter of Gisele Pellico has said that the horrific abuse her mother endured would never have happened were it not for the normalization of online pornography. I'm currently reading Laura Bates's new book, in which she talks about deepfake pornography and how this is the new frontier in misogynistic abuse. But I want to know, can the law ever prevent the harm inflicted by emerging and existing technologies?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, a woman in her 20s has died after a stabbing in South London. It happened in Croydon this morning. A man in his 30s was taken to hospital. He was later arrested on suspicion of murder. A body's been found by police searching for a girl in the River Thames in Kent. Two children got into difficulty in Gravesend yesterday. A boy who was rescued is in a stable condition. The Defence Secretary has suggested military spending will reach 3% of GDP by 2034. Previously, Keir Starmer revealed plans to increase defence spending by 2.5% by April 2027. Air Vice Marshal Sean Bell is a military analyst. He told us this increase won't be enough.
We are currently in the process of replacing our nuclear deterrent, so we're paying double what we would normally pay for nuclear, because we've got to run our current one and replace it. We're also giving £3 billion worth of aid a year to Ukraine out of the defence budget, and the Chagos Island deal coming out of the defence budget as well. So 2.5% where we currently sit is actually, if you do the maths, a slight reduction overall in the amount for normal defence spending.
Meanwhile, the US Defence Secretary is warning that China is rehearsing for a potential invasion of Taiwan. Speaking at a security conference in Singapore, Pete Hegseth says the threat from Beijing could be imminent. He believes any attack would have consequences for the rest of the world.
Every day, you see it, China's military harasses Taiwan. These activities have been paired with China's rapid military modernization and buildup, including huge investments in nuclear weapons, hypersonics, and amphibious assault capabilities. It has to be clear to all that Beijing is credibly preparing to potentially use military force to alter the balance of power in the Indo-Pacific.
And part of the M5 in South Gloucestershire remains closed after three people died in a car crash last night. A teenager and two people in their 40s died. Another child seriously ill in hospital. It's been the sunniest spring on record. Temperatures in West London peaked at 27 degrees today. Parts of the northwest have seen more showers and cooler weather. Temperatures are due to drop across the UK next week. LBC weather, though, staying dry and warm this evening and overnight. Tomorrow we might see some of that cloud. There'll be showers and strong winds in the north, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Sinead Carroll.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Natasha Devon.
It is 3 minutes after seven. Now, the daughter of Gisele Pellico, and I'll just remind you of her case, put a bit of a trigger warning on this, but if you have forgotten, Gisele Pellico was the woman who was, over a period of almost a decade, repeatedly subjected to sexual abuse of the worst kind by her husband and other men from surrounding geographical areas who he brought in to perpetrate this abuse. And last year she won her case against him, and it was such a landmark ruling, and it was such a huge moment. There was something really universal about it, I've thought, even though the details of that particular case were very unusual in a lot of ways. There was something about it that resonated with survivors of sexual abuse and rape all over the world. And her daughter, who is called Caroline Darien, has been speaking at the Hay Festival this week, and she said that what happened to her mother would never have happened without the existence of pornography websites. She says so many social problems can be traced back to online pornography. She was asked by an audience member how men can step up and be part of breaking cycles of abuse. And she replied, "You need to talk between guys about pornography because it's part of a system of violence against women and girls." And the reason that this story caught my eye is because I am reading Laura Bates's new book at the moment. It's called The New Age of Sexism. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I love Laura Bates so much. I just think the world needs her so much. And she's always one step ahead. She's one of these people that she has this ability, I guess, because of the world that she's in and the connections that she has, to anticipate what's going to be the next big thing that we are all talking about. And one of the points that she has made in many of the interviews I've seen with her and also in the book is that a lot of schools are still kind of stuck on the Andrew Tate thing. Whereas if you ask most teenagers, what do you think of Andrew Tate? They're like, oh, he was sort of a thing a couple of years ago. Now, that's not to say that there aren't several misogynistic online influencers who have copied Tate and still have influence within social media. I'm not saying it's not a problem. However, what is a much bigger problem, in Laura Bates's opinion, is this prevalence of deep fake pornography, which is being used to shame and silence women. And there are two elements to it. One is deep fakes being used on high profile women, particularly women's rights campaigners like Kate Isaacs and Emma Watson are two examples of women who that has happened to. But also politicians. A 2024 Channel 4 investigation found 30 UK politicians, including Angela Rayner, Gillian Keegan and Penny Mordaunt, have been subjected to deep fake pornography abuse on a site that has had 12.6 million views. And that's quite obviously an attempt to shame and silence and denigrate those women, to take away their power. But there's a second element in terms of how prevalent this is, and that is that it's taking place in schools. And Laura Bates describes this as a public health crisis. She points to statistics which tell us that one in three teenage girls are assaulted at school. There's 5,500 sexual offences, including 600 rapes that were reported across 3 years in schools to the police. That's one rape per day across the three terms of the school year, if you do the what Laura Bates describes as the very depressing maths on that. And deepfake pornography is increasingly becoming part of that process. And there's an entire chapter in her book that Laura Bates dedicates to this. And she says the laws around this are just not enough. That this kind of technology is running away so fast before anybody notices or does anything to stop it. And that's why I wanted to ask the question to you about all pornography, really, and the prevalence of online pornography and the types of pornography available. I mean, obviously, we have to be quite careful in the way that we discuss it. But I wonder whether you can see that it is leading to real world harms, that it is affecting the lives, particularly, although not exclusively, of women and girls, and what on earth we can do about it. Because, you know, 3/4 of UK men and 1/2 of UK women watch online porn, according to one report. So this is, you know, quite literally everywhere. And there's that horrible phrase, isn't there, you can't get the genie back in the bottle. But certainly the tech companies need to be held more to account. But what does that look like in reality? How can the law possibly legislate for this type of thing and the harm it can potentially cause? 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. You can text 84850 or send a comment to LBC via your Alexa, where I'm joined now by Professor Claire McGlynn, who is a professor of law at Durham University. She specialises in legal regulation of pornography, image-based sexual abuse and cyber flashing. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. So I know that there was a kind of explosion in awareness in around about 2014 of so-called revenge porn. And it was around about that time, I think, that your average person started to recognize that this was an issue and that it was affecting ordinary people's lives. How much progress would you say has been made since then?
Well, we've begun to recognise that some of this material is harmful. As you describe, we once called some of this material revenge porn, and we don't tend not to use that term anymore because it is very much a victim-blaming term, and it doesn't cover all the different ways in which abuse is perpetrated. And you've talked about deepfake sexual abuse. So we've made some steps towards recognising it, but at the same time as we've been recognising the harm, the AI and the technology has been driving forward. So that's why we now have this epidemic of deepfake sexual abuse, particularly in our schools. And at the same time as well, we have, you know, online mainstream pornography websites showing some of the most horrific pornography freely and easily accessible to anyone at any time.
What would you say to somebody who, and I've got no doubt that there will be people listening who will take this view, who will say, this doesn't harm anybody. What would your response be to that?
I don't think it makes sense to say that media watched by, you know, Pornhub has 130 million people watching it every single day. So I just don't think it makes sense to say that the number of people watching that media has no impact whatsoever. What is it that makes porn so different from, say, the PR industry or from advertising? What is it that makes it so different from Instagram, you know, or TikTok? Because we know that they shape our behaviour. We go out and buy more stuff that we didn't really want. We have attitudes that we didn't really want, as well as some of the really harmful aspects of social media. So we know it shapes our behaviour. So why would porn be any different? And so I think it just inevitably provides this sort of culture or context in which we live. It is, as you say, it's a kind of cultural wallpaper to our lives. I think the thing I'm not saying, it's not a direct relationship. You're not talking about someone watches the porn and then goes out and commits the act. And what we see with the Pellicle case, it's the kind of normalisation and legitimisation of sexual offending, you know, where people start realising it's as problematic.
Is it the case then that the technology is developing so fast that the law simply can't catch up? Or are there some things which are, you know, universal that would be really helpful that the government could implement right now?
Yeah, it's definitely not about just the law catching up. It's about society and the government being willing to take action in this case. You've got to remember, even on deepfakes, we've known about deepfakes since 2017. You know, it's been happening for a long time. So we could have acted right at the beginning of knowing about this and stopped it. But, you know, Google and others were showering people with these deepfakes and this information. So we could do an awful lot more. It's not just the law. There is legislation with the Online Safety Act that could be doing an awful lot more to challenge some of this material.
You are about the 20th person who has said to me, or expressed disappointment, I should say, in the Online Safety Act and talked about it being watered down. I mean, what were you specifically disappointed by, and what would you have liked to have seen within it?
So in some ways, the actual Online Safety Act is quite good. It's got some good principles trying to say we need to, you know, think about the harm on websites and remove that harm. The problem is in the implementation. It's just not there. So, for example, actually, the kind of pornography depicting rape is not supposed to be on these websites anymore, but it's all still there. You know, the websites themselves don't fear the Online Safety Act, and the regulator hasn't yet said it's going to take any action in relation to that form of extreme pornography. So in some ways with that, the legislation's there, we just don't yet have the implementation of it. The regulator's not yet acting, and the porn companies are thinking, why should we bother? Nobody seems to care.
And I understand from, I do a bit of work with the charity Glitch, which is, you know, specifically advocating for marginalised communities, particularly Black women and their experiences online. And they said that the first incarnation of the Online Harms Bill didn't even contain the word women in it.
That's right. 262 pages of a bill, and it didn't even talk about women and girls. And we had to fight really hard. I worked with Glitch and other charities to get some mention of women and girls in the Online Safety Act. But then all we got, if you like, was guidance. Mm. So it's not compulsory for the platforms to follow that guidance. So, we've been on the back foot ever since. And in relation to deepfake porn, the thing with Black and marginalised women is We know that the pornography featuring black women is more violent. So the deepfake pornography is also more violent and more misogynistic involving black women.
So if you could wave a magic wand and introduce something tomorrow that is going to materially help with this problem, what would that thing be?
That thing would actually be a more resourced regulator, and a regulator that was prioritising violence against women and girls and taking the action now to get that material off the platforms.
Professor Claire McGlynn, thank you so much. Professor of Law at Durham University and specialising in the legal regulation of pornography, image-based sexual abuse and cyber flashing. This is a significant problem. I know that you will have heard on this station, for example, there was a faked piece of audio of Sadiq Khan that did the rounds on social media. I think it was last year. It might have been a couple of years now, but it was a big news story at the time with people talking about how serious it was and how it undermines democracy. And that was a serious story, and it does undermine democracy. However, 96% of faked imagery and video online is pornographic in nature. And that, if you're looking at the way that it's weaponized against women who are in positions of power, is also undermining democracy. But it's also being used to harass, abuse and intimidate schoolgirls and lots of women who don't fit into either of those categories. This is a big problem. And it's not a problem that exists. Deepfake porn is not a problem that exists in isolation. Pornography generally is having a huge impact on society and its attitudes towards women and girls. So what do we do? What would you do? If I gave you a magic wand and you could introduce one thing tomorrow that you think would help us to tackle this problem, what would that be? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. You're listening to Natasha Devon, and the time is 7:16.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Just accept we need stop and search.
Straight to the point.
This is a shocking night.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
When was the last time your party was in touch with the electorate?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert. Nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Ready, steady, the Toyotathon sale event is on!
Race down to your nearest Toyota centre and save up to an extra £1,000 on a new Toyota. But hurry, deals must end 31st of May. The Toyotathon sale event is on!
Offer valid on eligible new vehicle orders 1st to 31st of May and registered by 31st of July 2025. Retail customers only. T&Cs apply. See toyota.co.uk for details.
Natasha Devon on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
717. So the daughter of Gisele Pellico this week has spoken out and said that what happened to her mother would never have happened were it not for the existence of online pornography. And remember that she's talking about abuse that was perpetrated not just by one man, but by so many different men within the surrounding areas of where Gisele and Dominique Pellico lived at the time. And that leads me on to the question that I want to ask you, which is, you know, clearly pornography is having an impact on us as individuals, as communities, as society. I think I want to ask you what that impact looks like. What is the impact, do you think, of pornography on the people around you? How do you see it impacting people? 0345 6060 973. But the more pertinent question is, what can we do about it? First time caller Jenny from Lichfield, what would you like to say?
Hi Natasha, I've got teenage twin boys who are 14.
Okay.
And they know about Pornhub. We've obviously never mentioned it in our house. It's you know, just something that we don't talk about. But they know about it through school friends. And it's just, I hate it. It makes me very sad that they know about it. Obviously, you know, you bring your kids up as best as you possibly can. But when they get to senior school, you can't control what or what they hear, what they listen to, what friends they're talking to, and it just makes me so sad. I think there needs to be tighter restrictions on that website.
I wonder, because I don't want to come across as a prude. Obviously, we're talking about the type and the availability of pornography rather than pornography itself. If you had to put it into words, Jenny, what is the difference between your 14-year-old son's knowing about online pornography websites that are free to access and very easy to access and 14-year-olds in the past finding a magazine in a bush?
Yeah, no, I agree. And my husband and I have had this conversation a lot, and he readily admits that with his group of friends, they used to go to the newsagents and they used to find magazines in parks and have a good look through. That's just part of being a youngster and wanting to know more. But I think it's the variation of content that's on that site. And I'm not a prude. I've had a look at it in previous years, and it's an eye-opener for me. You know, maybe I'm not as worldly as other people, but I just, it scares me. It scares me where it's going.
Yeah, me too. And you talk about there being tighter restrictions. What does that look like from your point of view? Are you talking about having to prove your identity in some way if you want to access these types of websites?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there's obviously ways and means that kids and young people get around various, restrictions, on sites on, alcohol sites and whatever, fake ID. But I just think there needs to be something, a passport, maybe that. I don't know what the answer is, but I think something needs to be done, and it needs to be higher up the agenda for our young people.
Why do you think it's not as high up on the agenda as it should be?
I don't know. I really don't know. I just think, the conversation that's happening on the station tonight, I think we do need to escalate it somehow. But how we go about that, I just don't know.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for calling, and thank you for making your first time call to this show. I hope that we speak again on a happier topic. So Tyler has texted on 84850, and this is symptomatic of a few of the texts that I've had into the studio when we've been discussing this. And it says they've got the Discovery Channel, don't they? Implying, I suppose, Tyler, that there are other ways and means of seeing similar content. But I think the difference is, and I went to see a fascinating lecture actually about online pornography by somebody who understands how these websites work. And very much in the same way as social media or YouTube or any kind of streaming service will do, what a pornography site does is it anticipates your preferences. And in order to keep you hooked in, it will give you a slightly more extreme version of the thing that it knows that you like. So what ends up happening, without wanting to be too explicit because I'm on the radio, but I'm sure you can read between the lines of what I'm saying. What ends up happening is these types of sites start to actually shape a person's preferences. And they can end up at a point where the material that they're watching is so very explicit. And that then can carry over into their real world expectations and their real world behavior. And that's why I think that Gisele Pellico's daughter is right to say that there is a connection and a correlation between people imbibing so much more pornography than they used to and violence against women and girls. So what do we do about it is the question that we need to ask. 03456060973 is the number if you have an answer. Grace has called from Ealing. What would you like to say?
Hi. Many things. I mean, I think on the one hand, we shouldn't in any way imply that porn makes, the people who committed these indescribable crimes any less personally responsible and guilty for their actions. I worry that some people might think that, that they've been influenced by this and so they couldn't, control. No, that they are disgustingly responsible and evil for what they have done. But it's also the case that we should be talking about how porn is absolutely influencing people. I mean, there was a Guardian article recently talking about men who didn't realise that they had particular sexual interests, and they developed these sexual interests because they wanted more and more extreme content. Mm. The brain gets bored of seeing what it considers normal, and so it wants more and more extreme content. And that men end up watching paedophilic pornography, which they have never expected that they were interested in. It's so disgusting and so disturbing. I mean, I was sexually harassed in high school, and that was horrifying for me. That felt so horrible. So to imagine what girls in high school must be going through now, and women who are actually abused and assaulted, the torture of that by comparison to what I went through, which is so mild by comparison, I just can't imagine it. And I think about, in the discussion of pornography, about Mary Whitehouse, who I do not know at all enough about because she's before my time, but my understanding is that a lot of people really resented her because she came across as far too judgmental. But she had some sensible points about some concerns. In a documentary by the BBC a little while ago, they talked about how she was concerned that various content was going to be impacting young people. And she was right. And she was wrong to be judgmental and to be friends with Margaret Thatcher. But she, I think that some people, they kind of, they react to, you know, what one might call a Christian morality about sexuality or something like that, because they're so frustrated by the judgmentalism that they see, they react to going too far the other way. And so now our society is increasingly, you know, allowing all kinds of things, and people end up being hurt. I mean, human beings, unfortunately, have been sexually assaulting other human beings throughout human history. So it's not just pornography. You know, prior to Christendom, here in the West, men thought that they could do whatever they wanted to women, and that's still the case in some parts of our world. And, you know, the government cutting overseas aid means that there are going to be more women and girls who suffer from sexual abuse, which makes me horrified. But it's not like it's just pornography, but porn is a massive factor.
Yes, and going back to your original point that you made at the beginning of your contribution, you said we don't want to imply that somebody is not 100% at fault for what they do or what they think is normal as a result of watching pornography. And I agree with you, but then I think, well, what if the perpetrator is 13? What do we say then?
I've always kind of felt that, well, a lot of things aren't a binary, aren't a perfect dichotomy. And I think that with young people in particular, your kind of moral culpability, it really does emerge. And it's kind of hard to have a legal system, you know, about child criminal acts, because a child at 13, to some extent, they really do know what they're doing, but they're not wholly responsible. And it's kind of hard to, you know, have legislation around it. But I would think that what's necessary is in schools for young people to be warned at a very early age that this content will impact their brain. Mm. It will make it harder for them to enjoy normal things in life. Yeah. You know, I mean, we know that some young people are having, you know, problems in that department, in relationships, because of the porn that they've seen. Mm. So I think that young people need to be warned from a really young age. And I think that while some people might think that, you know, traditional ideas about relationships and sex are just oppressive, and there certainly are people who've been oppressive and people who've been judgmental and horrible, but actually, you know, as a Christian, I think that God gave us guidance about relationships because he loves us and he knows what's best for us. And so sometimes some guidance about things can actually be positive for human beings, and we need to not always presume that the judgmentalism that exists,
yes,
and means I think go too far the other way.
In the instance that you're talking about, that actually the judgmental people or the prudish people are the ones that are saying we shouldn't talk to children about this issue, not understanding that they already exist in a world. I think it's half of children have seen pornography by the time they reach the age of secondary school. And then that goes up to 96% by the time they reach 16. Yeah. And then when you talk to parents, all parents think that their children are in the 4%, which, you know, can't be true by definition. Grace, thank you so much for your call. Lots of texts coming in on this. Dale says, I remember when The Sun ran a countdown to Emma Watson's 16th birthday, which is disgusting in of itself. Yes, I just did a little sick in my mouth. Dale, fast forward to today, and now she's a popular deepfake. Your guest is so right. There's correlation. And it's because she is an ambassador for the UN, Dale, and because she speaks about equality and she's a trans ally and she's a woman with opinions. And that's why WHO deepfakes are more often than not weaponized against. It matters because it is women in positions of power, which tells you that it's not actually about sexuality. It's about bullying and control. Tyler says the tech bros have too much power. They're a menace to society. Joseph says, why can't the government simply ban online porn, close down those sites? We don't need porn. It serves no useful function. Close it down. John says, look at the opposite view. Hi, Natasha. I can't see how they can be banned or regulated by the British government as these pornography websites are all located abroad. So why would they take any notice of British laws? No, but you can legislate for what you can see within the internet, within the cyberspace above Britain, which is why the hate speech laws, for example, on social media are different in the US than they are here in the UK. So it is possible for the Online Harms Bill to achieve something in that regard. But what does that thing look like? 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. You are welcome to contribute to this conversation if you are a man, by the way, and to tell me if you see an impact in maybe in your peer group of people watching a lot of pornography, maybe the way that women are thought about and the way that women are discussed. 0345 606 0973. If you want to talk about the impact it's had on you, you can use a different name and location. You can anonymize yourself. Really looking forward to talking to you more about this. But for now, it's 7:30 and it's time for the news headlines with Sinead Carroll.
A woman in her 20s has died after a stabbing in South London. It happened in Croydon this morning. A man in his 30s was taken to hospital and was later arrested on suspicion of murder. Part of the M5 in South Gloucestershire remains closed after three people died in a car crash last night. A teenager and two people in their 40s died. Another child is seriously ill in hospital. A body's been found by police searching for a girl in the River Thames in Kent. Two children got into difficulty in Gravesend yesterday. A boy who was rescued is in a stable condition. And a new three-drug combination could help people with breast cancer to live longer. Trials suggest the drug, which is not yet available on the NHS, also delays the need for chemotherapy. LBC weather, staying dry and warm tonight. Tomorrow is going to be cloudy with sunny spells, showers and strong winds in the north with a high of 23 degrees.
LBC.
Last year, Amazon was the world's largest corporate buyer of renewable energy, meaning more and more of our energy comes from wind farms like this one. Guys, what happened to recording at the solar farm? To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
Did you know you can get Santander cycles for 24 hours for £3.50? I spent the day feeling the morning breeze, rolling with mates.
Keep up!
Free wheeling!
For £3.50, you can get 24 hours of unlimited 60-minute rides on Santander Cycles. Download the Santander Cycles app to find your nearest docking station. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Pedal bikes only. Additional charges apply for e-bikes. Other T's and C's apply.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters, made to measure, hand-finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Natasha Devon on LBC. Text 84850.
It's 7:33. Do keep your calls coming on online pornography and how we go about tackling the impact that it's having. It's having a real-world impact, particularly with regard to violence against women and girls. And something needs to be done. And I wonder whether we have maybe allowed ourselves to fall into the trap of thinking it's too prevalent, it's too everywhere, it's the water that we're swimming in, it's the air that we're breathing, and we've either forgotten to notice it or thought that there's nothing that can be done. But there must be something. And if we prioritise it, that increases the chances of something being done expediently. Now, if our expert at the top of the hour is correct, and I'm sure she is, this hasn't been a priority heretofore. But I think if you and I start talking about it more and thinking about it more, that could change. 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. Before we return to that conversation, though, let's take a look at what's happening over in the US this week. It's been a big week and a sort of tentatively optimistic week. So there's two major things that happened. First of all, Musk has finished his tenure as the de facto vice president, let's face it. And he left the White House with more of a whimper than a bang, really. And it was all a lot less acrimonious than a lot of people were anticipating. But then also there has been this challenge to Trump's tariffs with three high court judges, two of whom I believe were Republican judges, because they have a different legal system over there, two of whom were Republican judges saying it is not legal for you to just go around applying tariffs the way that you have been in this kind of scattergun, illogical, sort of knee-jerk way. And so joining us to discuss this more is Daniel Lipman, who is Politico's White House correspondent. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Let's turn our attention to tariffs first. So what is the current status in terms of Trump's tariffs?
So a major number of these tariffs are scheduled to come to an end in mid-June, because they were ruled illegal by the International Trade Court in the U.S. It's a U.S. court, but deals with international trade. And they said that you can't just grab powers that are given to Congress if you're the executive. And so Congress can't delegate those powers, even if it's a Republican Congress. And so they were saying that this is not a true national emergency, that when you have trade deficits with every country, that is just the normal state of play. It may be regrettable, but it's not, you can't just put on these tariffs, which are hurting a lot of American companies that rely on overseas businesses.
So my understanding is that the reason that Trump loves tariffs so much is because it's one of the few things that he as president can do without anybody else's permission, but that was a power that was granted to the president, but could be taken back. As far as you're aware, are there any steps being taken to safeguard against him going crazy with tariffs again?
Well, Congress is Republican, so they're not going to pass new laws hemming the president in. And so you do have a lot of powers to put on tariffs, but for a limited amount of time. And so under the law that he cited, the court said you can put in a 15% tariff for 150 days, but after that, you can't. And so you had the reciprocal tariffs, which were of varying numbers, and you had tariffs citing fentanyl trafficking coming into the U.S. from Canada, when there were only 50 pounds of fentanyl. Those were ruled illegal, too. But you have this appeals court who said, hey, we have to do more review of all of these tariffs. And it's probably going to just go all the way to the Supreme Court. But I think in terms of your question, Trump likes tariffs because he wants to bring back American manufacturing, and his voters, many of them like tariffs as well because they want to get those jobs in manufacturing. And so that is kind of gift back to his base. But then there's also major parts of his base that are saying, hey, I didn't vote for much higher prices. I wanted more targeted use of tariffs, not these overarching economy-wide tariffs.
It's putting the cart before the horse in a way, isn't it? Because you need the ability and the resources and the infrastructure to be able to do all of the manufacturing in the U.S., which you wouldn't currently have.
Yeah, there's a lot of skilled labor that you would need to kind of reskill Americans. And many Americans don't want to work in factories. It's hard hours. It's a lot of work. It's physical labor. Most people would rather just work in offices and do services, be part of the services economy. And so maybe, when I'm at my desk typing an article up, There's not a huge part of me that says I want to build iPhones and put those little screws. And I think what Trump also, he received the blowback when he was talking about, oh, children can should only get two toys, not 30 toys, when that's much easier for him to say when you're a billionaire and you don't face those pressures of the marketplace.
To me, the fact that two out of the three judges that have put this the kibosh on the tariffs are Republican judges suggests that there is a very solid legal basis for saying that Trump cannot impose the tariffs in the way that he has been doing, these reciprocal tariffs. So I know that he's going to challenge in the Supreme Court, but should we be optimistic that that challenge will not be successful for that reason?
Yeah, because the Supreme Court is made up of a lot of conservative justices who they may like Trump personally, but they also have to live by what the law says. And especially conservative justices, they operate with something called the originalism philosophy, which is they look at the law as written or the Constitution, say, does the Constitution say you're allowed to have an abortion? And if it does not, then they're saying, okay, no right to abortion. So it's very black and white. And so the Constitution does not say the president has unreserved power to levy tariffs. And that law that he was citing does not give him that power either. And so I think that that's what the Supreme Court is likely to really agree with that trade court. But Trump could also find there's other laws that he could cite to try to put into, you know, affect new tariffs. But then those would be challenged as well. And we would have to see if they stand up to scrutiny either.
Let's talk about Elon Musk. I know that there were a lot of people who were anticipating that these two huge egos were at some point going to come to blows and it was going to be incredibly explosive. And there was a hint of schadenfreude there that we were all sort of waiting for the fallout of this bromance. And in actual fact, when it did happen, it was all very convivial, wasn't it?
It was, and Elon Musk was not going to talk about in the press conference yesterday. Oh, I disagree with your big beautiful bill. It explodes the deficit, I want you to save those Inflation Reduction Act, those clean energy tax credits, because that's stuff that he and his company have said in the last week. Instead, it was much more friendly, I think behind the scenes, Trump has been a little bit more testy, where he once he said, according to the Wall Street Journal, about Musk, is this what he had been doing with Doge? Is this all BS? So that is kind of the summary of what Trump might think. And Musk himself can't say, oh, mission accomplished, because he wanted to cut $2 trillion or $1 trillion from federal government spending. Instead, it's been maybe tens of billions, and a lot of that money is going to go away in terms of legal fees and back pay for those federal government workers who have been fighting him at every turn.
What about all of the data of private citizens, which was harvested by the Doge team? Will that remain within the government department, or is Elon Musk going to take that with him to X?
Yeah, he's not allowed to take that, and so we don't see any signs that he will. That would be a huge scandal if he does. But Doge continues, but it's also going to be much harder for, if you're a 25-year-old kid working for Doge in the federal government, you can't really, and you clash with your cabinet secretary if you're put in a different department. But you don't have Elon Musk to kind of be your backup. I feel bad for those Doge kids a little bit in terms of they will be kind of at the whim of, they'll have to find good workplace relationship skills in terms of dealing with their bosses. And they're not going to have Elon Musk to provide cover.
I shall prepare my teeny tiny little violin. Daniel Lipman, thank you so much. Political's White House correspondent there. Returning now to our conversation about pornography, what impact is it having on society and what can we do about it? Another first-time caller, Louise, has called from Richmond. What would you like to say?
So I didn't fully hear the conversation from your last caller who said that she didn't speak to her sons about it.
No, she No, she didn't say that. She said that she hadn't introduced the idea of online pornography to her sons, but they'd picked it up from schools.
Yeah, so I informed my young daughters from an early age about it, just being aware of it, because I know what pornography can do to men and what they can do with it. And I just think I've taught them a very strong lesson about what men can be like.
What did you say to them? At what age were they when you had that conversation?
So they were quite young, only because they'd been exposed to things, and they were in primary school. They were exposed to certain things, being exposed to them, like bullies and wanting to be with you in knowing certain terms. And this is in year 5 and 6.
Wow. So they're 9, 10 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So when they have those conversations with me, then I have then since then had full-on conversations about pornography and this is where it is. I've never degraded men in any way, but I've also made them fully aware of what pornography is and how men can potentially visualise you. And they've always taken that on board. But they feel... They know what it's like. They know it's threatening to them. They know that photographs can be taken of them. They know it destroys men's image of women. And I care for my children. But I think when it comes to pornography, I think the internet is a very, very, very dangerous thing. And there need to be controls about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Louise, thank you so much for your call. As much as I think it's great that you're having that conversation, and I think, unfortunately, we live in an age where all parents need to have that conversation with their children, regardless of gender, there also needs to be more done in terms of the tech companies themselves and restraining them. Louise, thank you so much for your call. 0345 606 0973. If you want to tell me what it was like having to have that conversation with your children and how young they were when they first became aware of online pornography, then please do give me a call. You're listening to Natasha Devon and the time is 7:46.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The only way is up for the UK's military spending.
I can announce this government will begin the biggest sustained increase in defence spending since the end of the Cold War.
And now a pledge to go further, as the government promises to get off defence and publish the Strategic Defence Review. The Prime Minister says Britain needs to get fighting fit, but will his plans simply cause more offence?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast, back Monday morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
Where would we be without the curiosity to explore?
It takes us to new places.
It even got us to the moon.
And now there's never been a better time to satisfy your curiosity about electric cars. With great offers on our award-winning range, including the Ioniq 5 and Ioniq 6, available with £2,000 deposit contribution and 0% APR. Discover more at Hyundai.co.uk. Ends 30th of June 25. Finance subject to status. Hyundai Motor UK Limited is a credit broker, not a lender. Terms apply.
Did you know you can get Santander cycles for 24 hours for £3.50? I spent the day feeling the morning breeze, rolling with mates. Keep up! Free wheeling!
For £3.50, you can get 24 hours of unlimited 60-minute rides on Santander Cycles. Download the Santander Cycles app to find your nearest docking station. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Pedal bikes only. Additional charges apply for e-bikes. Other T's and C's apply.
Barclays ready-made investments. The clue's in the name. Not Barclays where-do-I-begin investments. You can start from £50. That's why they're not difficult to get started investments either. And you can choose your risk level. So they're hardly in-at-the-deep-end investments. So, if you've got savings and you want to help grow your money over 5 years or more, then search Barclays Ready Made Investments. Make money work for you. Investing is not for everyone. The value of investments can fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Natasha Devon.
It's 7:48. This anonymous texter says, boys need to be taught to respect girls and women by teachers and parents challenging misogynistic attitudes in society, the news, newspapers and social media. The fifth of teenage boys are exposed to the likes of Andrew Tate must not be left to spread its danger. I completely agree with you, anonymous person. I should say that that statistic that you cited, that's the number of teenage boys who, at the height of his fame, if you like, thought that Andrew Tate was a good role model. I think it around about, I'm going to say 2023, you would have struggled to have found a teenage boy who hadn't seen Andrew Tate's content online. So it's cause for cautious optimism that 4 out of 5 weren't really paying attention. Nonetheless, this is a statistically significant problem. And I don't think it's fair to expect parents and schools to try and fix it by themselves. So what should be happening on the tech side of this is the question that I'm asking you, amongst other things, this hour. Sally has called from Stourbridge. What would you like to say?
Oh, hi, Natasha. Yes, we're bringing quite some thought to this. And obviously, it's everyone's job to try and protect youngsters. And they say you can't put the genie back in the bottle, but I do think that you can if you want to. I used to be a gambler, and I used to bet online, on the phone, in the shops, regularly every day.
Mm.
There is no way I could get a bet or have an account without a really thorough check and having a credit card. It just wasn't possible. If the betting industry can do it, I don't see why, I don't know who does this, everyone wrings their hands and says there's no way we can do it.
Mm.
I think it can be done, but everyone has to help, don't they? Your parents have to be on top of what your kids are watching. The teachers have got to be on top of what everyone is telling everyone.
Yeah.
But we know, for God's sake, we've had pornography forever, for thousands and thousands of years. Mm. There's nothing wrong with it. Women and men both enjoy it, but they're adults.
Yes.
And
but, well, also,
the difference between fantasy and reality. If you get exposed to it too young, then that's where everything goes wrong.
I agree with you. I think the age thing is a very important component of this conversation. But I also think it's about the accessibility, the availability and the type of pornography that is available online that can make actually anyone of any age vulnerable to having their attitudes, their behaviours, their preferences sort of manipulated and changed by the algorithm, if you like. And I think
I don't disagree with you, Natasha, but to a certain extent, I think that is out of our hands. But we can do something about
the children,
making sure our youngsters are not exposed to it and get, you know, the support from their parents, the teachers, you know, if it does fix it. But I don't believe they can't stop it for young people under 18.
Yeah, well,
if they wanted to.
Mm. Sally, thank you for your call, and we'll have to see what the impact of the Online Harms Bill being implemented has on this particular issue. Now, before we return to our conversation about that, let's take a look at the fact that US Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has warned that a Chinese military attack on Taiwan could be imminent, and he called on America's allies in the Indo-Pacific to boost defense spending as a further deterrence to Beijing. Well, joining us now is Asha Castleberry, who's a national security and foreign policy expert, former State Department US mission to the United Nations and US Army veteran. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. How worried should we be, do you think?
Yes, well, you know, when you look at this problem set as far as China's inner ambition to pursue hegemonic power in the Indo-Pacific, this is not a new problem. The Trump administration has inherited the determination of the PRC to be a hegemonic power. And what was said recently at the summit is that they are in pursuit of possibly invading Taiwan by 2027. Well, there's a lot of open sources and speculation that could be true when you look at the provocative activities that have been happening in the Indo-Pacific, you know, whether you're looking at the gray zone activities around Australia, looking at the South China Sea activities, as well as provocative activities going on around Taiwan. So there's a lot of indicators to point at as far as looking at the Chinese behavior. So what's happening right now is that the United States is calling on to establishing the regional deterrence, working very closely with the ASEAN community.
There's been lots of speculation about what caused Trump's apparent change in attitude towards Putin after the Pope's funeral, where he seemed to be less intent on parroting Kremlin talking points and started to be more critical of Putin. Could it be that this played a part? Because lots of people say, well, you know, if Russia can have Ukraine, then why can't China have Taiwan? Do you think that that's part of the picture there?
Well, looking at, you know, the Trump administration's desired interest in terms of international peace and security, there seems to be some sort of pattern where they want to pursue global peace deals, peacemaking. And as part of that effort is that the Trump administration has surprisingly been pushing for Putin to reach a peace deal with Ukraine. And then when you heard the recent remarks in Singapore, it was more about we don't want war. We want to have a preventative a strategy of prevention. So it's quite interesting to see where I think there's a growing interest of just in terms of looking into peace deals and just not really going into a war or a conflict in the international system. So I think it's more of that. And then we'll see. Mm-hmm.
And when Russia invaded Ukraine, I mean, it certainly in Europe and the ramifications were felt throughout the world. It had such a massive impact on the economy, mainly because of the oil and gas supplies. In terms of if Russia were to invade Taiwan, what would be the non-military impacts?
Oh, yes. I mean, in terms of, you know, the PRC invading Taiwan, yes. As far as the potential consequences or impact, when you look at the situation with the economy and the technological issues, as far as being able to seize the semiconductor industry, that will be massive in terms of the PRC be able to have full control of that industry and also going beyond of acquiring full control of the global supply chains. I mean, it will be massive in terms of economic impacts. When it comes to the potential of China taking over Taiwan. So, yes, it would be extremely devastating for the United States and the rest of the world as far as China being able to take over Taiwan, especially when it comes to the technological issues as well as economics and other geopolitical issues too as well. And then it will also increase the battlefield confidence of them to go into other parts of the Indo-Pacific because of for the fact that they have invaded successfully Taiwan.
Asha Castleberry, thank you so much for your time this evening. National security and foreign policy expert there. Let's return to our conversation about online pornography and its real world impacts. And Rachel has called from Coventry. What would you like to say?
I sort of echo in a little bit what the last lady said. Banks and building societies and all other financial institutions are able to verify your identity online. There's algorithms all over social media where if you search harmful content, it will come up with the appropriate or related helpline number, but show you the content. Sorry, my voice is gone. And then also even things like signing into your media streaming account, it knows where you are. All of those things, your biometrics, everything. They can do all of that when they want to. There's no reason that they can't do it for this. The only difference with the tech giants not safeguarded against it and taking the content down is that their profits aren't being affected by it enough or at all.
Yeah, Rachel, I'm going to let you go because of your voice, but I'm really glad that you rang up to make that point. And I think it's absolutely true that where things are considered to be a priority, they are acted upon. But I don't think that the safety of women and girls has ever been a priority at any time, anywhere, really. But it's certainly seen as something that is worth placing on the altar and sacrificing for profit in the attention economy. this anonymous text says the lockdown probably had something to do with the proliferation of porn addictions. Human beings aren't meant to be inside alone for months on end. That's probably true. Another anonymous text says, I'm a 40-year-old man and I was first exposed to porn online in the 90s when the internet was introduced at the age of 14. I became addicted and would watch porn every single day. I felt constant exposure to porn has been responsible for the removal of emotions from my relationships. Online porn needs much more regulation and strict access by asking users to create accounts and provide proof of age. Porn should not be accessible without an account. Andrew says pornography must contribute to the incel epidemic. And more of you saying that, you know, really this needs to fall on the shoulders of parents and schools. And I'm always wary of saying schools should solve this because there are so many problems in our society that schools are supposed to be solving, and they have limited resources and limited hours in the day. But certainly more resourcing and priority should be given to this issue for sure. Now, in the final of the show, have you ever been ghosted? Ghosting is the phenomenon whereby a friend or love interest suddenly stops communicating with you, often without warning and without you necessarily understanding what it is you've done to offend them. New research suggests it's happened to 25% of us and that the impact psychologically can be quite profound. What effect has being ghosted had on you? And why do you think that people do it?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock. Search teams looking for a girl who went missing in the River Thames in Kent say a body has been found. It was recovered in the water near Gravesend, as LBC's Joe Hawkins now reports.
Police had been working with the RNLI and say the remains of the child were located just before midday earlier today. Their search began yesterday afternoon but had been paused overnight. Formal identification hasn't yet taken place, but Kent Police says the girl's death isn't being treated as suspicious.